Today is the 3rd of May, April. I was so proud of myself for one small moment. Xuanzha's guiding and aiding living beings. Pointer. Taking charge of the situation, he hits home and smashes to pieces the golden chains and the hidden barrier. He acts according to the imperative so that he obliterates all tracks and traces. Tell me, where can there be any confusion? Case. Xuanzha, teaching the community, said, "The old adepts everywhere all speak of guiding and aiding living beings. Supposing they encounter three kinds of sick person, how would they guide them? With a blind person, they could pick up the gavel or raise the whisk, but he wouldn't see. With a deaf person, he wouldn't hear the point of words. With a mute person, if they had him speak, he wouldn't be able to speak. But how would they guide such people? If they couldn't guide these people, then the Buddha Dharma has no effect." Okay. I keep on thinking I'll move on to another koan, but every time I look at it, some more sort of juice left in the orange. There's one aspect of deaf, blind and mute that we haven't yet looked at, which is a particularly Zen style of looking at things. And it's connected with what we recite every morning before we chant the mantra, the Heart Sutra itself. We use a shortened version for the chanting, but the text talks of form as emptiness. It's quite an interesting, just to divert for a moment, interesting sutra, because it has sort of lyrical aspects about the figure of compassion, the bodhisattva of compassion, and then it goes into form is emptiness, emptiness is form, which sounds a bit like a sort of philosophical treatise of some kind. And you sort of switch from the heart to the head, or so it seems. Anyway, it begins, "Form is emptiness." Emptiness is form. Whatever is form is empty. And the text goes on in the sutra itself. It says, "Form is emptiness. No eyes, no ears, no nose, no tongue, no body, no mind. No sight, no sound, no smell, no taste, no touch, no object of mind," something like that. Very detailed, very particular Indian style. So let's just have a look at this word emptiness for a bit. It's good going all day. He's trying to beat me. One aspect of emptiness is the completeness of experience in those moments of stubbing your toe hearing the book, Makiri. Those moments when any sense of being a discreet, unique self just disappears right into that experience. Just boom. We talked a lot of stubbing toes yesterday and summing Ray knows intimately. And so do we now, of course. He's shared his toe with all of us. Beautiful, right? Beautiful toe. Blue, swollen, misshapen, pointing the wrong way. But in that moment, in that instant, we sometimes say we disappear into that moment. We are called into that moment, seized by the scruff of our neck as we fall down, as we hurt, as we see a pink cloud or a small white flower on the side of the road. In that moment, the conventional world of me and of form is radically changed, I'd say. And then we come back into the world of form immediately. Call the ambulance. Are you all right, sir? You know, get up. You're a fool. Whatever it is. And we live in the world of form and we live in the world of emptiness, understood in this way, constantly. Sasaki Roshi used to talk of the absolute world and the relative world, the world of emptiness, the world of form. And he said, it's so fast you can't catch it. It happens 84,000 times a second, he would say. Of course, we all try to count. I can't even get the date right. But there's this sense, and it's quite a classical teaching in its own way, that we are just endlessly beyond the speed of sight or of apprehension, just moving between these two worlds of form and emptiness. And please, I'm just using these words to try and point at something in our experience. They're never going to be quite right. Necessarily so, I think. The sense of no eyes, no ears, no nose, no tongue, no body, no mind points to that part of emptiness where there's not even a sense of my toe or your toe. There's not a sense of me. There's only, okay? No self. Very classic Buddhist teaching in that moment of no self. We attain no self. Attain emptiness, attain no nose, no ears, no eyes, no toe, no body, no me, no you. So sometimes in Zen writings, if you happen to pick up a sutra at the dentist, extra People magazine. Probably learn more from People magazine. But anyway, if you have that kind of dentist, you'll see phrases like the only monks who can see are the blind ones. Only the deaf can hear my words. Or Avalokiteshvara covers her ears. Pointing to that sense that when in those moments of complete selfless experience, we are in that sense beyond hearing, for instance, a shout, beyond hearing, we are deaf and blind and lame. And it's the lame who can truly walk, it's the deaf who can truly hear, the blind who can truly see. Kind of language. It becomes a sort of a Zen in joke as well, so just beware of that. You know. And it's said as a great compliment, oh, you deaf fool, as a great compliment, meaning you really have heard my teaching. There's another aspect of the word emptiness that is also relevant here, and that is that it points to the indescribable interconnectivity of this life. That we are not discrete, separate individual beings with this life that we put on a pedestal, as it were. That if we really look at it, at just ourselves as an example, we are just a assemblage of genes, of inherited physical attributes, of things our grandparents said to our parents that we heard as little children, of attitudes we absorb from the people that were in our environment when we were growing up. That even the food that we eat, the books that we read, the talks that we hear, the jokes we find funny, and just continually the ripples just go out. The apple is not just an apple, it's inherited genes, it's pips, it's skin, it's sweetness, it's taste, it's the tree, it's the weather, that the sun, the rain, the soil, it's the farmer, it's the agent, the transporter of fruit, it's the truck driver, it's the truck driver's wife, it's the truck driver's children and dog, it's the fleas on the dog. You get the picture. So when I say, what am I, standard Zen question, it's really quite tricky. It could take a long time to answer. It just means that the preeminence we give to not only ourselves, but to each separate things in this world of ours, it's just tumbling into infinity all the time. And in that sense, everything is empty. What we take as the world of form is the world of emptiness. It's the world of indescribable interconnectedness. And all we can say about it is, I don't know. Or just, phew. You know. And in our Zen practice, we in one sense, it's a training in emptiness. And just to use the words that I was talking about earlier, we become fit for nothing. Okay, that's what we must be, fit for nothing, good for nothing, useless. Okay. Emptiness is form. This indescribable world that we are part of appears as form. Not from some heavenly realm elsewhere, but as this world itself. They are inseparable. Form is emptiness. Emptiness is form. Whatever is form is empty. Whatever is empty is form. The same is true of all things. All is marked with emptiness. Nothing is what it is. Not even emptiness. Not even emptiness. If you stick on emptiness as something, you're incurable. Okay. As we all are. So, emptiness itself is not a thing. It's all just, without beyond comprehension, manifesting as form in this ordinary world, as the brown floor in front of you, as your aching knees, as your sore back, as your sniffling nose and your sore tummy, your sleepless nights, all of that. And we can't hold this in our head. We can't hold it together. It's not holdable. And our practice is to be fully in the world of form, fully in the world of emptiness. Part of the Zen training is learning to get a sense that in this world of form, we fall regularly, endlessly into the world of emptiness, into that world of and then we're in the world of form again, saying, oh, a clap. As we practice, we become accustomed to the movement, as it were, between form and emptiness. And please, these are just words I'm trying. We become used to the process. We become more aware of the magnificence and selflessness of moments of emptiness. And we become aware that in those moments, our connectedness with this world is complete. That we are absolutely, unassailably part of everything. And when we become at home in the world of form, we take that sense with us and give ourselves to the world of form, the world we live in. We give ourselves to our sitting down and our standing up, our coming out, our going in, to the food we eat, the apple, the wind, the floor, the job, the spouse, the children, the road, the weather. Without any sense of judgment, just living in all of this. And when we're aware of the process of moving from one to the other, there's a sense that it's beyond all judgment. This is the content of our life. This is what I am. And the more we're familiar and at home in the world of oneness, if you like, emptiness, the more we live in the world of form, the more we bring with us the scent of emptiness into our lives, our ordinary lives. We bring what Suzuki Roshi called letters of enlightenment. And we bring with us the almost molecular memory of our oneness with things. Oneness not as a numerical digit, but as a sense of our belonging, of our inseparability from everything. And when we bring that with us, there's an innate wisdom that comes from seeing the whole of it, from not just having a partial view. The kind of just instinctive wisdom that comes from being part of it all. And with the memory of our inseparability from everything rises this natural compassion that allows us to stand in the shoes of each person we meet. Each breath of wind, each turn of the windmill. And in all of this, it's not something we achieve in the way we normally use those words. It's something that when we just step back, this is what arises as naturally as the mist on the dam in the early morning. So to do this together is an unspeakable opportunity. Thank you. Let's just sit a bit.